The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Hear KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law, local historian, overall good guy, and a pretty good bridge player from the sounds of it, but also author of Where Past Meets Present. It's available on hellgatepress.com. Find out more about Dennis, dennispowersbooks.com. Dennis, welcome back. How you doing, Doc? Good to hear you.
Always a pleasure, my friend, especially because it gets the week off to a great start.
Indeed. We're going to have a little cup of coffee here, and we're going to do a palate cleanser. Been a lot of serious news here this morning, and we've been talking to all about it, taking folks' calls, and we got the good, the bad, the ugly. And I imagine you were you over at the hands-off rally in Ashland on Saturday? Because everybody had one.
Yeah, I drove past it. A couple of the folks I recognized as being from actually not the university, but they had their doctorate and were waiting tables. And I will tell you, there's a lot of bearded wonders outside with the various placards reading the same. And in any event, they were coming out into the street, and you could just the key thing, my friend, is the fact that you could see that those people that didn't have their own business, weren't raising kids in a family, and had time on their hands, were out there, and they could go back to their empty apartment when it was done.
Yeah. And they were bringing out the same kind of slogans that got them unelected in 2024. That being said, though, we'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. We're going to do the palate cleanser first here, which is some local history. And I love the stories about how our various communities came to be. Today, we're going to take a look at Central Point. Now, Central Point, was it like a central point between one city and another? Or was there another reason it would be called that it was called Central Point? Where did it all start, huh?
Actually, good introduction. It was so named because two pioneer wagon trails crossed it where it now exists. One was north and south between the Willamette Valley and Southern Oregon. The other was really from Sam's Valley to Jacksonville. And the key thing here was that, stagecoaches and wagon trains would go over very muddy paths during the rains, but these were hard as cement under a hot summer sun. One of the key things about Central Point, Bill, is the fact that it really was the first, if not one of the two first cities or towns in Southern Oregon. And that's really interesting because the railroad didn't come through yet. Central Point went back to 1852 when Jacksonville was started, and Medford was just sagebrush.
And at this point, apparently the Magruder brothers were some of the founders here, or the people that ended up founding it, or were there other people involved too?
Yeah, good point. Actually, Isaac Constant was the first pioneer, and you had street signs. And then the Magruder brothers came and built a store there. And then when the post office was established in 1872, the town became officially known as Central Point.
And naturally, the railroad comes, and then that pretty much says, hey, as soon as you have the railroad, you've arrived, right? You're official, that kind of thing.
That's true. But, you know, the interesting twist here, Bill, is that the town folks were smart here, smarter than Jacksonville. That was, and this is not a negative on Jacksonville, but the town folks in Central Point knew that the California and Oregon Railroad would bypass it because the city was not where the right-of-way was. So the landowners and the townsfolks gave the right-of-way to the railroad to build its tracks over their land.
Okay.
Then, my friend, I love this. They then relocated the town to where the station depot, and that's the reason why you had the tracks coming through on its main street.
Oh, so the original location of Central Point was ended up changing by where the railroad would be. Okay, so where was the original point of the crossing of those stagecoach routes? Do you know? Could we describe that?
Actually, when you're going into it, it would be actually going ahead and more see things.
That, so it was closer to Jacksonville than it is right now.
Right. And but in any event, you can't even really see that now because it's all built up. Interesting enough on your question is that this is the only one where it allowed it to become really the first town in Southern Oregon. And also, it was right on the right-of-way, and right now, its population, which then was maybe in 100 people, is now 19,000. So it's one of the largest next to Medford Grants Pass, towns in Southern Oregon. And then, of course, you had the Grange Co-op that started there, the Jackson County Ape Expo relocated there.
Oh, yeah. Now, Grange Co-op, that's almost its own story, but that was started with the farmers paying up, I think it was 10 bucks a piece is what you wrote, right? 10 bucks a piece, yeah. and we're gonna try to get a better price for our crops, right?
It was perfect because it was one of the first co-ops that came in this region. Actually, it was the first in this region and one of the first on the West Coast. And what really came in there was that they invested $10 each. There were 99 of them, and they could pool their products together for better prices. And then that's where the co-op, with its large grain elevator, which is the tallest man-made structure in Southern Oregon, even after the fire, that where it was then rebuilt. So Central Point really does stand out. We have enjoyed going to different places and restaurants there, but in terms of the history of things, it was one of the large places to be. Jacksonville, it, and Ashland were the key ones before really the railroad came through. And then from there, different changes happened.
Yeah, once Medford ended up becoming the county seat, then I guess the political heft then moved a little bit then, right?
Yeah, and the airport was a key thing because then with Medford having the first municipal airport in all of Oregon, and that was with George Seeley and a couple of real pioneers. And these people were taking risks. I mean, when I think back to the 1930s, and actually the airport, what first was put in, it goes back to the mid-1920s. And I think about the way things were, just in terms of getting around. You had no I-5, you had all these different things, and yet they come up because Medford was equidistant between... you had San Francisco and Portland.
Mm-hmm. And it's still that way. Even when people are playing a show, they'll often stop in Medford or in Southern Oregon because we're kind of halfway between Portland and San Francisco. There we go. Okay. Hey, Doc.
Because that's where the Holly came in.
I love it. I love it. Central Point by Dennis Powers. We'll post that on KMED.com. We appreciate the palate cleanser here of the news this morning here, Doctor. And let's get back to the news because there's plenty to talk about that between tariffs and Trump and judges and the island of misfit humans doing their hissy fit over the weekend. We got it all. We got it all. All coming up, all right?
Two Dogs Fabricating carries North Star Flatbeds.
Evening 6 to 8 on KMED. You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
All right, Doc, where do you want to even start on the weekend's news and what's been going on? And do you want to hit the stocks first or something else? What are you thinking overall about tariff 2.0, Trump tariff 2.0? What do you think?
Well, we can certainly very quickly go in there, but one of the ones I wanted to bring to our attention is that the AP, the Associated Press, has lurched so far towards Soros. And it is a blight. And for example, in Sunday's Courier, I picked up an article in Faith that said majority of immigrants in U.S. at risk of deportation are Christian. And it goes in and says as many as 4 in 5 immigrants are risk at deportation from the United States are Christian, according to a new report.
Isn't that about the only time I've ever seen the AP give a damn about Christianity overall?
Ah, good point, my friend, because the report says about 10 million are vulnerable to deportation. But you keep going, and I kept saying, what is this report they keep talking about? Mm-hmm. And as they talk about the problems of deporting Christian immigrants from the United States, you find out that there is World Relief, which is an evangelical humanitarian organization that co-sponsored. And then you take a look at this particular entity, and it is in for gender equality. It is in for immigration legal services. It is in for trauma counseling.
Oh, in other words, it's a Christian group that's in on the government grift, right?
And also, they do bring that up to a certain extent in terms of when you go into it. It started with very good humanitarian concerns, and there are some humanitarian concerns and things that they do. But the key thing here is that AP, which is the majority of the articles in the Courier, are AP, and they all have this slant towards the far left. And the problem is they have great journalists there, like Paul Fattig. And I would imagine that for different cost-cutting reasons, they're going ahead and they're running AP articles.
Well, yeah, I don't think, no, you're not talking about Paul Fattig being there now. He's not.
Actually, what Paul's doing is he's writing for the Courier.
Yes.
I've always liked Paul. He's been a good friend for years.
You know, I thought he had passed away. Gosh, you know, Paul, I'm sorry. The reports of your death in my mind were a bit greatly exaggerated. Okay.
He has an amazing story because Paul, for example, was a wrestler. So we had that in concern. But when he had, I believe it was a very bad, probably in the service automobile accident, he actually has been really working over that. He lives out in the Applegate. He's a fine writer. And I would like to see more Paul Fattig, and I'd like to see less Associated Press and the Courier.
All right. Well, very good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, Paul landed, at least there. That might help. That might help the Daily Courier. I wanted to talk to you, though, about the tariff situation. As a professor of business law, I would imagine generally I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably not in favor of tariffs generally, but maybe specifically at times. I don't know. How are you feeling about this particular push that has knocked the financial world to smithereens temporarily?
Well, you know, Bill, thanks to you, I decided to really look into this yesterday. And I'm in favor of these tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is being hit on the stock market. And what we're seeing is for example, journalists now are losing money on stock investments, like their favorite New York Times is down 20% from where they probably had bought it. And you could take a look at what's going on here. As to the tariffs, one is that thanks to the Biden administration, the U.S. has to refinance some 25% of maturing debt, which is $9 trillion, and where one basis point, that's actually 0.01%, will save $1 billion in interest. And so by putting in these tariffs, you have revenue coming in, and then also people are going away from Wall Street and the silk stocking crowd.
Yeah, well, let me ask, though, is there not a danger that the people piling into bonds right now are really more, which is driving down the yields, by the way, which is the interest
right.
rate going down.
Right.
But isn't that
right.
more of a fear of a recession, the reason that they're doing that, though? And so that ends up being, yeah, we'll get lower rates, but we're getting lower rates because of a recession rather than, you know, some other policy. What do you think?
Yeah, that's true, because what we have now is that the far left, and I've given up listening to CNBC because it's totally political underneath the guise of stock advice. And the reason is the fact this has only been 2 days, and they're already talking about recession probabilities depending, and they're cherry picking to continue these fears.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we don't want to lose money, even if it's not that much, in the stock market.
Well, nobody does. Who does? Who does?
That's true.
And I know the idea to say be a patriot, let your 401k, you know, be cut in half. That's a hard sell. Wouldn't you agree? A little bit of that.
Oh, I agree. And then we could go into the constitutional and the legal types of arguments.
Yeah, let me just switch it to that, because I noticed that there's now starting to be rumblings of various Republicans now starting to say, hey, listen, the power that President Trump is using to put in these tariffs, he's taking broad emergency powers in order to do this. And do you think that, you know, the Rand Pauls of the world have reason to be concerned about this, and that the tariffing power is supposed to be negotiating with Congress over these sort of things? What do you think?
Well, first of all, the ones that have already come out are the ones that are posturing for 2026. But let's take a quick look, my friend, at the tariffs. With England, it's only 5.8%.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go to in the EU, it's only 20%. And this is with...
Now, is that what we're doing or what they're doing to us?
This is the reciprocal tariff.
Okay.
This is in terms of what it is now. Now, you look at Vietnam, 46%. Taiwan, now this was interesting. Neighbor, friend, not neighbor, but in terms of political need for our protection... Taiwan is sitting there at 32%.
Yeah, I get that, except for semiconductors. We're not going to tariff them on semiconductors. Obviously, we need that, right?
That's a good point, and I checked into that one, Bill, because those who went into NVIDIA are saying, why in the hell is NVIDIA going down? But the reason is the fact that Trump then came out and said that we will be putting tariffs onto chip manufacturing and chip design. And so these stocks have been coming down as rapidly as the ones that are, for example, industrial.
Yeah. Now, he's trying to get the chip manufacturers in Taiwan to locate more here. I understand that. I read an interesting piece, though. I wanted to run it by you. Martin Armstrong, interesting guy over at Armstrong Economics. He put out a piece over the weekend that said that Taiwan would be foolish to build a chip manufacturing plant in the United States, because if they do, there's no reason to any longer protect Taiwan from China. I thought that was an interesting, almost like it's a tariff trap is what he's calling that. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a different read, Bill.
You do?
The reason is that, first of all, to build those type of plants will take 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
And that certainly cannot be, you know, from the far left, the sky is falling crowd after just 2 days of this. And you see, the thing with Taiwan is the fact, if you take a look at, and China's an excellent example, at to where, what is really being tariffed. Now, let's take a look at China very quickly, because that's one to where what we give them, or what we sell to them, is oil, gas, and coal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what comes back is furniture, toys, clothing, and the imbalance. We import three times as much, which is...
Yeah, I know that we import three times as much. Here's the part, though, which I think is economic nonsense coming out of the Trump administration, all right? And hey, listen, I want to say, hey, everything's great, but I'll disagree with the president when I want to, okay, when I think it needs to be done. This whole idea that any trade imbalance needs to be gotten rid of, and he's more or less made this, is absolute economic nonsense when you are the reserve currency. By nature, you have to run some trade surpluses with the world. Otherwise, there are no dollars for them to be able to use for their reserve currency. We're the world's reserve currency. We have to export dollars. That's our number one export there. By definition, because we're a fiat currency, world reserve currency. We're the one. Now, if you don't want to do that, that'll change a lot of things around, though. What do you think?
Well, the currency fluctuations has always been an argument. And what happens is with China, and we can take a look at other countries that have done this, is the manipulation that they have done on, let's say, China in the case of the yuan, is one to where they are not only beating the prices, but because of the currency fluctuation, where the yuan, when it translates to their importing into the U.S., is even cheaper.
Yeah, I get that. They have two different types of Chinese currency. One is for internal purchases, and then another one is used for trade. And the yuan, which is used for trade, is pegged to the United States dollar, right?
Yeah. So what we're seeing, though, is that the reserve currency is one to where we really aren't the reserve currency in different areas where China has gotten in with its program.
Oh, okay. Well, and but you understand, though, that there has to be a surplus of dollars in the world, or else otherwise world trade does freeze up because of
Yeah, and that's what caused our inflation.
Okay.
Right. Because the big problem that came in where I was first going in terms of having to refinance $9 trillion in maturity debt was that the Biden administration and the Obama far-left administration were going ahead and trying to convince the world to go DEI and said, don't worry about defense contributions.
Oh, I know. And that was nonsensical,
we're
too.
We're going to tax the hell out of the American people.
Yeah, and that can no longer happen, and Trump is absolutely right about that. I'm just getting concerned, though. I want to make sure we don't totally have a global capital flows freezing up. You can understand that concern, right?
You know? Oh, well, we saw that actually going back to Obama, because we can remember when they had the financial crisis and it froze money market funds then, mm-hmm. and Trump wasn't even around.
Yeah. Point well taken. Hey, Doc, why don't you hang on? We'll continue this, and if someone has a question or comment on it, we'll be happy to take that, too. This is the Bill Maher Show, back with Where Past Meets Present. We're on to the present here, and it's everything tariffs. And do we have any judges or political talk here that we need to get into also?
Oh boy. You're hitting all the big ones on the head, and I do have concerns about the tariffs, just to be, you know, honest and out on about that.
Yeah, yeah. My only concern is I don't think we should be tariffing something which we can't build or likely will not build. That's all I'm getting at.
I agree. The only thing I could say, my friend, on that one is that they're trying to stop the fentanyl that's coming in from China that you pointed out so well in terms of coming in through Canada and Mexico, where China is putting in all the raw ingredients and having it shipped into here.
Well, I guess making fentanyl is a job that Americans won't do for the time being. All right, we'll talk more when we're back after news. This is the Bill Maher Show, 770-5633.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Oregon Department of Education is
on West Main Street in Medford.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Maher Show.
Overall, regardedly optimistic on the tariff situation here, Dr. Powers, but what do we got to watch out for, you know, in your storied business professor of law opinion? Huh? What do you think?
I think the constitutional crisis that's happening now is, Bill, the national injunctions that are made by federal district court judges. And mm-hmm. the problem is we have a very liberal Chief Justice, John Roberts, who has been sitting back and saying, well, let the appeal process work. And what has happened is the fact that these judges have issued over 80 national-wide injunctions against both Trump administrations, more than half of all issued. And guess what? Over 90% of all of the nationwide injunctions have been issued by Democrat-appointed judges. And so what we have is a liberal chief justice who's sitting back and doing a litmus test as to when he is going to be forced to come out on this. And he's actually sitting back because he would like to see Grassley go ahead and come up with a change by Congress, which is they have the constitutional right to do since they created the district court system, to go ahead and to limit the nationwide injunction, which means that one judge sitting in New Jersey
determines it for the entire country. Yeah.
For all 50 mm-hmm. states.
Now, where did this come
from?
Is this a judge-grabbed policy, or is there something in statute or the judicial rule which said that, yes, a federal judge in some district, no matter where it is, could make a ruling that affects the entire country? It never made sense to me, but what can you tell me?
Well, thank you, because, Bill, I mean, I saw that decades ago, and it's called judge shopping, forum shopping.
Right.
There's two things. Courts have to have jurisdiction, the power to make a decision over the individuals that are there. then venue is what court, because you can look at all the different district courts throughout the United States, federally, but also here in Oregon, and try to get something that gets you into a friendly left-leaning judge who is the first one to say, aha, I can now go ahead and have some of the recognition. And they take it and they run with it.
Yeah, and I get that, though, but are they permitted to, were they granted this amazing judicial privilege to decide for the entire country at a district court level, or is this something which has just been implied or assumed? Where is the root of that? Because now they're talking about reining it in, but I'm wondering how it happened. Can you explain that?
Because of two things, in my estimation, I could be wrong, but from what I've seen, Bill, one is the fact that Roberts has sat back and allowed this to happen, just like he allowed, and they allowed, these far-left demonstrators to keep the Supreme Court justices up at 2 o'clock in the morning, having to do with the decision that came out on abortion.
Right. Now, to be clear, though, was this a power that was grabbed rather than granted?
I have always believed it is power that has been grabbed.
Okay.
But you see, where I'm wrong is that if a judge comes in, right or wrong, and says, I got the power, screw you, that's what's happened.
Well, then, who corrects that judge other than impeachment?
It's two things. One is Congress, and they're trying to do it by coming in with a rule that would put in, for example, the jurisdiction cannot go beyond the individual parties who are there, not into all 50 states.
That's and that would be a reasonable way of doing it. That would be reasonable.
But my friend, the problem is that as soon as that happens, you're going to have the Soros-funded attorneys coming in to attack it, to try to get a friendly judge. The problem of the constitutional crisis is that this is part of a total conspiracy to stop not Trump. It's stopping the American people.
Well, it's about stopping Congress, too, because it appears that the judiciary, let's face it, the left understands that they can't count on winning elections all the time, as we could see from 2024. But if you own the judiciary, they're figuring they don't need to win elections. Is it that serious?
It is, because it goes back to Obama. Obama, with his Harvard Law Review, which is another story, and his Harvard Law degree, who then became a community organizer, and his questions of his citizenship, which is another story, started right off the bat impregnating the Justice Department with his attorneys. And Trump, in his first term, got waylaid by it. Biden then had four more years to do it. This is a constitutional crisis, and it is one that is facing this country because on bar exams, and Bill, I had took three of them, passed all. And on every single one of them, the answer I would give would be contrary to what these judges are doing, and then it got me high grades.
All right. Let me then, I'm going to play the other team's game here for a second. All right. You're talking about a constitutional crisis with liberal judges in all of these district courts then making decisions that they will claim then affect the entire country and make it next to impossible, to govern for President Trump. All right. Running the administration, the executive branch of the administration. Then I will look at other writings that are saying we have a constitutional crisis with President Trump trying to do everything in the administration by executive order rather than legislation when it is needed to be run through Congress. Would you agree or disagree with that? I'm going to do the corollary too. What do you think?
it's going to be interesting.
All right, that's why I brought it up. Okay, I'll play their side just for the sake of argument here. Okay. Hello, Dennis?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Well, what do you think?
I didn't hear it.
Oh, you didn't hear it. Okay, what I was asking for is that the other side says that the real constitutional crisis is President Trump doing everything via executive order where he doesn't really have granted authority constitutionally, and that he's not going through Congress for much of this. What do you say? They say that's a constitutional crisis. Do you agree or disagree with that?
His doing executive office and orders is not the constitutional crisis, because the checkmate has come in from the far left judges. And Bill,
that would then seem to be that we have alternating constitutional crises, though. Do you understand what I'm saying? Oh,
well, you see, the far left is very good at going ahead and giving sound bites and trying to convince you as to what's going on. And this is not an argument. I'm an independent. I'm registered as an independent.
I know.
And the thing is that when you see these things, the radical judges, seriously, like Bosberg, these tentacles are out there. Bosberg, for example, roomed with Kavanaugh at Yale Law School.
Hmm. And Kavanaugh is somewhat squishy too, for that matter.
Well, not as much as
Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett's the squishiest of them all, next to Roberts.
What's frightening about this is that it goes way back to when Obama, and I saw this and I said, this is terrible, at a State of the Union message, berated Roberts in front of all the American people and televised in terms of court decisions that he had before him.
Yeah, I remember that well. Let me go back to the latest decision from the Supreme Court, which came out Friday. All right. Trump administration was told that that they are no longer or they're allowed to block grants to school programs that are pushing DEI. OK, this is something that President Trump ordered. Chief Justice Roberts joined the three liberal justices in dissenting. OK,
exactly.
Yeah. So no surprise about that. So
Roberts,
they're
squishy.
Yeah, but still squishy. And in your judicial opinion, is John Roberts, I'm just asking for a regular guy take on it, all right? Are you still a member of the bar? Could they disbar you?
I am an inactive member of three bars.
Okay, good. Good. I can ask you this question. It's not like I'm going to get you thrown out of work or something. Okay.
Oh, right.
All right.
If I was active, I couldn't answer it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you believe that John Roberts is just a closet liberal, or is he more likely, and this is my opinion, controlled?
I believe he is controlled, and I don't know what Obama – we used to talk about this, Bill, years ago, and you would bring up that issue, and I'd think about it, and I'd look and check things, and then I came back and I said, I agree with you, Bill, and then we would – that he is controlled, and then we would throw out jokes about what is controlling him.
Yeah.
It's really too bad that at this constitutional crisis that we have a squishy – Chief Justice.
Because if you have a squishy, controlled Chief Justice, then where is the control going to push it when we end up having all of these constitutional crises coming up there with regard to district court judges? Will he rule to, you know, according to his handlers, or will he rule according to reigning in judges, which he should be anyway? Because if there's going to be a nationwide injunction on something, I could see that coming from a nationwide court, and that would be the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court only. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
These are all good points, Bill. My personal take, though, is the fact that Roberts, in going back and forth with the fact that it really is at this time a 5-3 or 4-3 situation, he's running back and forth as a cheerleader. And he's going ahead and saying, well, look, I just voted against you on this, but I voted for you in this last one we came out on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I've lost all respect for Roberts because of the fact that I've seen the change, and it goes back to some very good observations that you made some years ago.
Well, I appreciate the take here, Doc. Out of time, but I'll tell you what, we'll certainly kick it around next week. What do you think we should be looking for this week? I know. There's one more question I had about stocks because, of course, you're a retired professor of business law, right? All right. I was reading Sean Ring from the Daily Reckoning, dailyreckoning.com. I respect a lot of his acumen. And he was
talking about a lot of good informational areas.
Yeah, and he was talking about the sell-off that might save America, what we're witnessing right now. By the way, all my gold and miners stocks are just exploding this morning. I think I think this is because of inflationary and shall we say sporty times, I think is what's going on with that. But what Sean talked about I thought was interesting. He says, for a while, investors like North Star Charts have been discussing a capital rotation event, and this event involves investors rotating out of tech stocks and the like into commodities and or precious metals. Again, I think mining stocks will do well out of this, but if this is the case, Trump may regret taking a hammer to the markets. He may have set off a decades-long rotation. That means the SPX and the NASDAQ won't return to their highs for a long time. He says, if you think crypto will save you, it doesn't look that way because capital rotation's treating Bitcoin more like a tech stock rather than it is an actual currency of some sort. Are we looking at a potential capital rotation right now beyond just like, hey, you know, tariff-induced instability? What do you think?
Absolutely right.
So you think he's right about that? Sean's right.
Well, I don't think he's right. In my own personal opinion, to 10 years out. But in terms of the rotation going on now, you're absolutely right, because they're rotating into consumer staples. You know, they're going into different ones like Procter & Gamble, for example, snacks and things like this. They're also going ahead and rotating out of those such as retailers that are dependent highly on their cost of different goods coming in
from China.
And you're absolutely right, because that rotation, and you could see it now, because some of the big seven are going up now today. Now, the other thing I want to bring in, you're absolutely right, Bill. The other one that I want to bring in is the fact that Trump is not sitting back, not aware of these problems. And all of a sudden today, the market went from a real negative up to a positive.
Yeah, I'm seeing some green shoots this morning. Of course, the one thing you want to make sure it's not is a sucker's rally. You know, you always have to watch out for that, right?
And that's what it was, because it was someone that released a rumor, because the hedge funds and the alphanumeric computers are going crazy right now in trading, released the rumor that it was heard that Trump would probably give a 90-day hiatus to these Trumps, to these terrorists.
I've not seen any serious reporting on that. No way. Well, he's sticking. He's staying the course on this. You know,
I was watching it on CNBC, where they were then going ahead and really supporting this. And then all of a sudden, I got to Fox News. This is just before we started talking, Bill. You've been on the air ever since 6 o'clock, before I then found out that the White House was denying that. This is the sucker's rallies that are happening because of the fact that, you know, you have a lot of people coming back and forth, and it's only 2 days.
In other words, relax a little bit, right?
Yeah, relax, but on the other hand, if you cannot afford to have the losses, talk to your broker and make some decisions. If you can afford, decide if there's one that maybe you might go with. You know, it could be an Uber. It could be, I'm not making any stock advice. It could be Amazon. It could be the ones that they were talking about on Friday. But the thing is that this is a very uncertain time, and it's a tough time, and all of us are having problems in the stock market. It's just a question of, you know, we've been doing this, you and I, we've been seeing this market for decades. And so there's a certain type of when you're retired, a certain ease you feel that those who are building up nest eggs wouldn't be feeling.
All right. Hey, Doc, always appreciate the talk. We'll have you back next week, and you have a wonderful week, and we'll have another Where Past Meets Present, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of dramatic news next Monday, too. It's just the way it goes.
And, Bill, I always learn something from our discussions.
All right. Me, too. I always appreciate that. Thanks, Doc. 8:58 and change. We'll talk to you again on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday.